We're running. We're rolling.
Welcome to Merit or Bits SD Cropcast, engaging the South Dakota farming community in the pursuit of healthy, functioning soils.
Hi, I'm Buzz.
I'm Barrett.
And we're from Merit or Myth. And this is our first podcast. We're thinking of calling it the SD Cropcast. SD Cropcast. What do you think about that?
I like it.
Okay. It's better than the Clodcast, right?
I don't know what Clod means. So well, I would say so.
Okay. Well, let's stay away from the Clods, right? All right. Well, I'm really excited about podcasts.
Yeah. So why do you specifically feel that podcasts are the right platform for us for getting our message out there?
Well, remember those 27 hours we spent driving from South Dakota from South Carolina to South Dakota?
Too well.
Okay, what did we do? What did we occupy ourselves with?
Podcasts.
So I was thinking, well, guys, you know, who are farming barely have time to watch a 3-minute video, let alone a 10-minute video. But we've got all of this great recorded material. I don't know how many interviews we've done, but I'm going to guess we've got probably 10 hours of interview material with farmers and researchers, and it's all super stuff. It's packed with information, and you know, if you plug it in while you're on your tractor or you're on your way from Huron to Pierre or from Pierre to Rapid City or something like that, you're going to be able to listen to this. And that's what really excites me, because we can pick and choose information in videos, but some of the deeper information comes from just listening to the, you know, what people are saying.
And I would say we're also looking to get involved with our audience out there. If there are any questions that they have from a particular interview or anything that they would like to be discussed or learn a little bit more about, we're certainly more than open to getting involved with them.
Yeah, so you basically hit us up on Twitter or maybe post something on our Merit or Myth page, and we'll try and answer it and see if there is any material to go on. So who have we got today?
I believe this first podcast is going to be about our interview with Randy Anderson.
Randy Anderson, that's right. So Randy Anderson is a weed specialist, but you'll see he's a lot more. So this is the SD Cropcast number one. Really exciting. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you find something super useful.
Okay, guys, welcome aboard. Dr. Randy Anderson is a revered weed specialist in Brookings, South Dakota. And one of the chief areas he addressed with us was that of systems thinking.
What we mean by systems thinking is trying to look at a broader perspective than just saying, I planted corn this year, I want to use herbicide A or B.
Right.
What we're trying to do is the way we design the system as a whole. We're trying to design the system such that it is the least favorable for the weeds. And so, give you an example, if you mix crops with different life cycles, that gives you more opportunities to stop the weed before it completes its life cycle. Therefore, it cannot produce weed seeds and have more seeds in the future years. And so if you do like winter wheat and corn, they're quite a bit different than comparing just to doing corn and soybeans.
Right.
And so when we bring in a lot of crop diversity with different life cycles, we can actually help weed management quite a lot.
So, Barrett, you had a question for me.
Oh, systems thinking. How would you define systems thinking?
Well, I define it as looking at the entire, taking a step back and looking at everything broadly. I think in our modern day agriculture, we've tended to break things down and think in terms of silos. So this is fertility. That's one problem. Weeds are another. And so neither the two shall mix. And what systems thinking really does is says you've got an entire agro ecosystem, whether it's, you know, you're tilling it, or whether, and you're planting corn on soybeans on corn on soybeans, or whether you're, you know, you've got a very diverse rotation with cover crops. Each one of them is a system, and you've got to, when you think in terms of systems rather than a particular problem, it kind of broadens your perspective. And this is kind of what Randy Anderson brings to the table. In the interview that I had with him, one of the things that I was surprised as, and Dwayne Beck actually talked about this as well. Dwayne said what really irritated him was that a lot of weed specialists actually are herbicide specialists. And when you listen to what Randy has to say, he's not thinking in terms of, I've got weed X, I need to spray herbicide Y, or, you know, use mode of action Z. He's thinking, you know, what caused that weed in the first place? So his first thing goes to this whole idea, what kind of system am I using? And at the heart of that is going to be obviously your tillage system. Are you tilling or not tilling? And the second part of that is what kind of rotation am I using?
I'm glad you used that word specialist, because when you started talking, that's what I was thinking about. As far as, you know, we've commented that a specialist is can be pretty much the opposite of systems thinking, because you're so narrowed in your focus on fixing one issue that you oftentimes don't see the whole picture.
Yeah, I think that, well, we could go down that road in terms of an education system, but really, in this mode of thinking, we've got to start thinking like ecologists. And if you listen to someone like Beck or like Randy, you know, they're thinking, in my mind, like ecologists rather than sort of, you know, I'm a corn grower and I just do corn and I leave that the rest to the... He's looking at the whole system as he goes along.
That's a big jump. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it is. Because part of this is that we've got such an efficient food growing system. You know, you've got experts in all sorts of things. We've got great technology, great seeds, you know, great herbicides that deal with different things. But you'll find that, again, this is, I'm quoting Beck over here, you know, whatever technology we can throw at Mother Nature, Mother Nature is going to quickly find a way to overcome that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our issue is not to play catch-up over here, and we're trying to preempt the whole idea of weed proliferation as we go along, or certainly in Randy's case. And again, you know, if we're looking after our weed issue, say, with diverse rotations and cover crops, all of a sudden we're finding, well, our hydrologic cycle's being fixed. All of a sudden we're finding that our nutrients are being recycled. All of a sudden, we're finding that the rules that apply to pest management no longer apply because we've got larger predator populations. So, you know, part of this and part of talking about this to farmers out there is that this is not just about residue or soil temperatures or weeds or economics. It's a whole deal. And sometimes you can't separate one thing out from the other.
And as Randy says, there are also a lot of other reasons for utilizing systems thinking.
Another advantage is, of course, when you're concerned with herbicide resistance.
Yes.
When you have diversity of crops, that gives you a much greater diversity of mode of action. So you can avoid using the same herbicide over and over again. Also, even if you do use the same herbicide with different crops, that means you don't apply the herbicide at the same time. For example, if you plant corn, you may use a herbicide called glyphosate. But if you have winter wheat there, of course, you're not going to spray it then. You may use a different herbicide or may not even apply herbicide at that time in early May or whatever.
Right.
And so you have a tendency to minimize the development of resistant weeds.
Okay.
Also, it avoids having these explosion of weeds. When you say you do continuous corn several years in a row, the foxhills seem to explode. Or if you do winter wheat several years in a row, the downy brome explodes. You have a tendency to avoid that, so therefore you do not become so reliant on using herbicides to bail yourself out, so to speak.
And if you're going to use the same herbicides over and over again, you run the risk of breeding for herbicide-resistant plants, yes, or herbicide-resistant weeds. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
In fact, they've actually done some simulation models on that.
Okay.
And they can come up very quickly with resistance if you're doing continuous cropping of herbicide every year. If you only use that herbicide once every 4 years, their models predict that you won't even have resistance.
All right.
Provided, of course, that you control the weeds in alternative years with other herbicides.
So it's the same issue. It's rotation not only of your crops, but also of your herbicides. And so I guess Mother Nature, after 4 years, has forgotten, or those bugs can't see that far, those weeds can't see that far ahead or behind them.
Yes.
Okay.
I was thinking while you were saying that it can be so easy for us to think at times that, you know, we as humans have advanced so far, we'll come up with a new machine, we'll come up with a new herbicide that'll finally fix this issue we're having with Mother Nature. But Mother Nature is so highly adaptable that anything we throw at her, she's going to have an answer for.
Yeah. Well, basically, she's got anywhere, depending on what your belief system, she's got anywhere between 4.5 billion and 6,000
right.
years of
yeah.
R&D more than we have.
She's got a lot of experience.
So she's going to come up with something. And absolutely, I think we'll be able to keep up with all this stuff with technology. But there are a lot of technology fees attached to seeds and herbicides and premiums that we have to pay to kill stuff. Whereas, you know, how can we look at other ways where, you know, we can grow stuff to outcompete, you know, what we've got? And this is, to me, this is the value of Randy's approach in the whole system. I'm really excited about his 2x2 system. And then he also mentions this 9-year rotation that includes several years of perennial legumes being alfalfa.
Let's check out what Randy had to say about this 2x2 rotation of his.
Out in the drier areas when the producers first started no-tilling, of course, in that region they were doing winter wheat fallow, so they started adding a diversity of crops. And there were several studies conducted throughout the Great Plains where they tested various rotations. And after these rotations had been in place for 8 to 10 years, we went out and assessed the weed populations in the crops. It was actually the background density in the soil. And what we found is the density was the lowest or the least when we arranged to have rotations that had two cool season crops followed by two warm season. An example might be dry peas, winter wheat for the cool seasons, then corn or soybeans for the warm season. It seemed like when you, of course, diversify a cool season and warm season, you gain an advantage. But when you do it 2x2, for whatever reason, you get a greater advantage.
Okay.
And part of that's relating to the loss of the seed's viability over time.
Okay. So, and help me, because I'm when you're talking about 2x2, is this a total of 4 years?
Yes.
Okay. This is a total. So we're not double cropping here or anything like that. Okay. Being from the South, I need to understand that. So you've got 2 years of a cool season crop, and at that stage, the warm season seed population has increased. And then by the
actually, the warm season decreases because it cannot complete its life cycle in the cool season. So the density goes down. The cool season does build up, but then you've got the two warm season crop with different life cycles to suppress the cool season
correct.
Weeds.
Correct. So what I was asking was initially the warm season seed density is highest at the beginning of that cool season crop,
yes.
And then those two cool season crops in a row will suppress the warm season, or there might be some germination, but the competition is going to essentially run those seeds out. Is that correct?
Yes. And also because you have an earlier harvest date,
okay.
You can control those weeds before they start flowering and stuff.
Man, so that all is extremely eye-opening, but check out what Randy's research shows about herbicide reduction in light of this.
Producers who were doing this have reduced their herbicide use 50%, but they didn't do it right away. They were using standard practices, good practices to control weeds, and the population kept getting so low, they realized they didn't have to use them anymore. And so they could eliminate herbicide use in the crop.
Okay.
Particularly in narrow planted row crops such as winter wheat or Prosa millet, because it's a lot more competitive.
Yes.
But that was one of the first changes they made, is they started eliminating herbicide use in winter wheat because they just didn't have any weeds.
Right.
When they had that four crop cycle.
Yeah, so this is an advantage. You know, soil health sometimes often seems to be sort of an abstract good, but here we're seeing people take advantage of, you know, being able to cut back on their herbicides.
So if you have a field that you've been tilling for 20 years and you're converting to a no-till system, you're probably going to have to use a little herbicide in the beginning to deal with the weeds.
You'll use, when you go to no-till, you buy a sprayer. Yeah. That's what you do. Yeah. So you will use herbicides. But as you get better and better, mm-hmm. Going from a black earth to a no-till situation is a huge deal. You know, you're selling your, hopefully selling your tillage equipment, your discs and everything else, and you're buying a sprayer and a smaller tractor. And so that in and of itself is a huge change. So the guys, I'm sure, initially would be using more herbicide. But as you get practiced at it, you know, you're going to be able to cut back.
But this wasn't always the case with no-till, as Randy would soon tell us.
In the Corn Belt, when they first started no-till, they found that weed populations were much higher in no-till. Partially that was because they didn't have the best herbicides. As they improved herbicides, they came back to they're about equal. But they did not have a reduction in weed densities. It was only when we brought in diversity of the 2x2 that we got such a drop in weed density, and this is particularly prominent out in the drier regions, say central South Dakota.
Okay.
In the Corn Belt, they still have a lot of weeds in no-till. But again, when you're doing corn soybeans, they have identical growth intervals, and they select for the same weeds. And so if you have any weeds that escape control, they then produce weed seeds and it builds up. I wanted to say a producer in the Corn Belt, or even out west, could achieve the same things we do with no-till, or with this diverse rotation, by using extremely high levels of herbicides. But again, what happens? That enhances the amount of resistant problems. When you do the diversity, you bring in the other cultural aspects, and therefore you just don't need herbicides as much, and therefore that reduces the selection pressure for resistance.
So Buzz, as you would ask Randy in the interview, Mother Nature certainly prefers diversity. The data is there to show this, but unfortunately for those running a high disturbance, low diversity system, this is the exact opposite of what Mother Nature wants. And Randy uses the case study of farmer Gabe Brown in North Dakota to kind of illustrate this point.
What Gabe has done is, he of course has striven a lot for diversity, and so he has a lot of these principles, plus he's brought in perennial legumes. And so he has a sequence of these perennial legumes where, of course, you're mowing and harvesting the forage.
Yes.
It's very difficult for the weeds to complete their life cycle. Plus, it's no-till. So whatever seeds are produced remain on the soil surface. And so if you can have like 3 years of alfalfa, you have a tremendous suppression of the weed population. It's very favorable. Gabe also uses a lot of cover crops. And so therefore, he's filling, preempting those spaces, and therefore capturing the resources before the weeds get to it, you have a chance to prevent downy row from completing its life cycle, and therefore you favor the natural loss of weed seeds in the soil.
Okay.
And therefore when you plant winter wheat 3 or 4 years later, you have a very minimal seed bank.
Favoring the natural loss of weeds through the usage of diversity makes sense, though it is counterintuitive to what a lot of us believe. But check out what Randy had to say about how tillage can increase weed production.
When seeds are dispersed by the plant, they of course fall to the surface of the soil. If you go out and till and you bury those seeds actually last longer.
Okay.
In contrast, if you leave them on the soil surface with no-till, their survival is much less. And to give you an example, when it's on the soil surface, you have kind of wetting and drying. That means that seed coat, which is carbon, can actually split like a board.
Okay.
Well, when it splits, that means a seed dies.
Right.
when it's in the soil, you don't have that diversity, that extremes. Another one would be the tremendous temperature extremes when it goes from, say, freezing to thawing.
Okay.
That's really hard on the seed because it has to invest energy to prevent itself from freezing. Well, when it's in the soil, you don't have those extremes. And so almost all the research shows that, like, if you bury a seed 4 inches compared to leaving it on the soil surface, the survival or number of seeds that persist into following years can be 5 to 10 times higher.
Okay.
When it's buried in the soil.
Okay. So the idea then, part of that system's thinking is not only your rotation, but actually not to tilt, because in a sense you're giving your weed seed very good seed to soil contact and preserving it for the next season.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
One thing Randy said that was new to me was the concept of tillage actually helping to bury weeds better as
yeah.
opposed to a no-till system. I wasn't aware of that, and that's kind of counterintuitive.
Well, everything, you know, basically tillage, when you're dealing with tillage, you're dealing with the paradox, because for thousands of years now, man has used tillage, number one, to create a seedbed, and number two, to deal with weeds. And now we're getting to the point where we've seen with the research and everything else that anytime you till the soil up, number one, you are creating a disturbed system, and that disturbed system is exactly what the weed seed has been designed to do. And so when you're tilling it up and disturbing it, the weed seed actually goes ahead and germinates. But what Randy was talking about, or what Randy talks about in this podcast or in that interview, Randy is really talking about when we bury the seed, it's preserved in the soil much better than if it were left on
right.
the surface. So in the surface, it's going to be heating and then especially
yep.
cooling in the winter, so that seed, so it might crack open. But there's another part that John Lundgren and I spoke about, was this whole idea of granivory. You know, those weed seeds are really quite nutritious, and so you've got all these little bugs on the surface going out and munching away at the weeds. So again, this is the whole system thinking. If you think of bugs as being all bad,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you want to spray them, that's ultimately
yes.
going to influence your weed population. But if you're trying to preserve everything and trying to let the system work out on its own, you know, those bugs are actually going to eat those weed seeds as well. But certainly, the moment you till, you're burying weed seeds, and then Randy's talking about, what was it, 5 to 10 times more weeds
mm-hmm.
that are preserved, weed seeds that are preserved, as opposed to simple no-till. What's really refreshing about Randy is, with this whole systems thinking, I think is everything, all of the research that he has really starts to benefit the farmer and reduce the farmer's dependence on herbicides, chemicals. And not only when the farmer follows a systems approach does the farmer end up, you know, taking care of those weeds, but we're also seeing costs go down. And Randy specifically talks about costs going down to, you know, farmers were using the 2x2 rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, and all of a sudden their costs, that they're suddenly in a wheat situation, we're just not seeing the downy brome. So they cut back by 50% on their herbicide. So that's a real important one. And then the Gabe Brown thing where, you know, he's not only doing the diverse rotation but adding cover crops. So he's using about 20% herbicide compared to other people. So as these costs go up and as people try and sort of use new technologies to combat new things, you know, the farmer really needs to find every advantage to reduce costs as well.
So it's not only avoiding the creation of herbicide-resistant weeds, but saving money in the long term as well, because you don't need as much herbicide.
Yeah, you don't need as much herbicide. And I think what Randy also is talking about is that if you take, if you start looking at your rotation and your system in general is your first line of defense. Your last line of defense should be herbicides. Now, I'm not saying we should eliminate herbicides, but I think what Randy is saying, you know, we can make a lot less use of herbicides, less trips across the field, less expenses. You know, Barrett, this whole mentality is so contrary to what you'll see in some of the industry publications, you know, where you see pictures of weeds sort of shivering in fear of this fantastic new technology.
Yes.
And do you remember that time we were in, we came back from South Dakota and we stopped off with Ray Archuleta in Springfield, and he told us about what Gabe Brown said said to him one day.
Yes, one of my favorite quotes.
Well, tell us what that quote was.
Well, you probably remember it a little bit more accurately.
Okay. Well, Gabe told Ray that there was a time in his life as a farmer that he used to go to bed at night thinking, well, what do I need to kill tomorrow? And he realized over his journey, he now goes to bed at night and what do I need to keep alive, or what do I need to make living tomorrow? And that is such a fundamental shift in mentality. And so Barrett and I have yet to come up with a final quote. Who was the guy who we used to listen to?
Pete Holmes has a podcast called You Made It Weird, and his sign-off line is, keep it crispy.
I wish we could use that.
I know. I love keep it crispy.
But I was thinking about keeping it, keep it live, keep it alive, keep it alive. But you're not all that.
I love the quote, but I'm not all about keep it alive.
So we're also looking for you guys out there to tell us, is there a different way? I'd love to say keep it crunchy, but that's too close to Pete Holmes' thing.
Yeah, so we're on the lookout. If anybody has any ideas, feel free to get in touch with us on our Facebook page or through our website.
Or Twitter.
Or Twitter.
Yeah. So this is Buzz.
This is Barrett.
Signing off on Merit or Myth.
Keep it crunchy.